Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live some weeks on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Check my Twitter feed, ANNZAC, for more. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Burchy. Jacob's here.
Hey there.
All right, we got a special guest. We mean to have this guy on the show for a long time. We've been trying to get him on the show for a long time. We're taping this show live with chat just to make it extra fun. But joining us today is brand manager Miles from Crunchyroll. Miles, how's it going?
Good. Really excited to be here.
I feel like Miles is like your brand.
I'm really bad at coming up with screen names I stick with, so I'll have them for like 2 years at a time and then not want nothing to do with them, so at least my name I can't get rid of.
Right. Well, and people know you from on Twitter as MilesExpress999, one of the sort of social media faces of the company, and coincidentally, we are not going to be asking you any industry questions at all during this show. in a classic AnCast bait and switch.
We just want to get to know the real Miles.
Where I bring on a representative from a company and then ask them no questions about their job. we are planning a bigger show with Crunchyroll that will answer a lot of industry questions. And we'll go into all of that stuff. But we had been talking about having Miles on the show just as a fan. And so that's what this is. Miles is here as a fan. But that means if I can't ask you work questions, that means these questions have to be personal. Right, Miles?
Oh, no, we ran away.
Ideally, yeah. I mean, how deep do we want to get?
Well, I was just going to ask you about your early days as an anime fan, right?
My early days as an anime fan.
Yeah, right. Like you were – okay, so I know I've seen photos of you from – didn't you go to UC Davis?
Yeah, I went to Davis.
And you were in the anime club there, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
right.
Yeah. I mean, that was my glory days of anime, not even necessarily the early days. But, yeah, Davis, that was a really fun time for me because I joined the anime club first week of my freshman year.
Of course. Right.
I was only, like, kind of involved with the anime club in high school, so to join that was a big deal. But it was the only friend I had at the school was in the anime club, so it started from there, and I met the woman who ended up being my fiance in anime club in like the first quarter. I made all the friends that I have today in that like first little bit, and I realized that anime club ended up being like this really important thing to me. Like it wasn't even about the anime; it was just this is where I met all my friends. This was what was my college experience from day one, and so. Once I got an opportunity to be more involved, I ran for president, and then all of a sudden we went from a club of 15 or so active members to 250 active members.
Right. 300? See,
so
now I'm older than you, but when I went to college, the UC Davis Anime Club was known to us in Tucson, Arizona. Like it was,
yes.
It was a known quantity.
There were a lot of tape trading going on back in the 90s, a lot of tape trading, because we were the Berkeley Farm School, so we'd get all the same tapes that Berkeley, Cal Anime Alpha had, and we would be passing them along to the non-UC clubs.
Oh, okay, so maybe that's how we knew you. But I know there were, like, tales of screenings where hundreds of people would show up and everybody would talk
about
that aspirationally.
In the 90s, we would fill auditoriums on the regular.
Right.
And, I mean, honestly, that's... That makes sense, because in the 90s, Anime Club was like the only way you could watch anime. That was the reason why it existed. And so for an anime club in, you know, 2009, 2010, 2011, to have anyone going to it is kind of impressive to me, because it's no longer about access, it's about community. And anime communities are really challenging to sustain.
Yep. So. After about 2 years or so, yes, they are. right? Isn't that the stereotype?
Well, I mean, that's how long it lasted under my reign.
Well, so then you have firsthand anecdotal experience to back this up, that it lasted about 2 years. I was president of my anime club for a little longer than that, but I stayed president longer, nice. Way longer than I should have. And my reign turned into a terrible nightmare by the end. Like, I should have quit. Or they should have pushed me out. But it was bad news to near the end. Lots of drama. So
an anime club doesn't have drama.
Yeah, well, that's what they're for, right?
Yeah.
That's what they exist for. They pretend like it's about trading VHS tapes, but really, it's about, you know, dumb high school drama. So you were president of your anime club, so then was immediate, like, you wanted to go into the anime industry, like, as a job. That was your goal.
Oh, God, no. That was the last thing on my mind.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like I heard a different story at some point.
Well, by the time I ended up wanting to work for Crunchyroll, there was nothing I wanted more. But when I was still in school, I thought I was going to be like on the Chicago Mercantile Board of Exchange. I was studying agricultural economics, and I really liked doing the statistics and all that, and it was really exciting to me. And yes, I started like an anime convention at Davis that lasted a whole 2 years. And then that second year, I invited Crunchyroll, and they came for whatever reason to my little college con.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, they said, hey, we think you're an okay guy. Do you want to fly around the country, like, working cons for us? And that sounded really cool to a college student. So I started doing that, and I was doing that for the first 2 years of my professional life while I was doing jobs that were both interesting and miserable. Like, I worked at a tomato processing plant for a full season. And I
Sounds
did
fun.
Other... Yeah, it was interesting. Climbing up at the top of the citric acid tower every day at 4 a.m. Yeah.
The what?
So we had this giant, like, 50,000 gallon thing of citric acid, but I would have to climb up four ladders to get to the top of it because the reading was only accurate at the top of it.
Okay.
And I'd record the amount of citric acid we had every day to see if I needed to buy more.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. See, all of this stuff, it feels like maybe it's just because I read 21 chapters of Orange in like 2 hours, but all of this sounds like right material for like a shoujo or like maybe like a seinen nostalgia-y kind of a manga, you know, about especially like the anime club days sound very formative, especially if you met your current fiance there and still have all those lifelong friends. It sounds like a tinkly shoujo manga to me.
Well, there was one other part of it that kind of ruins that.
We'll leave that out.
Well, no, but it's kind of... I actually want to share it.
Okay. It'll shatter my dreams.
Yeah, I have to. That's what I'm here for. I got really frustrated with the university for not letting me do as much stuff as I wanted as an anime club. Like, we had, like, two shadow clubs so we could get extra room reservations, and we found all these different ways to juke the system, but it wasn't enough. So I got involved with student government and then eventually became a senator. And by the time I left Senate, one out of every four senators was from the anime club.
Man, that's insidious. Mm-hmm. That's
an anime club.
That's they fucked with the wrong guy.
I didn't get anything done, but it was fun.
Well, you know, that's bizarre. All right, don't mess with Miles. I guess that's actually a little terrifying.
See, no more Jose right there. That just sounds like weird and awkward now. We're like a Tim and Eric show instead of a manga.
No, that still sounds like a manga, just now it's a different audience and maybe in a different magazine.
Goodness.
All right. Jacob, what have you been watching? What's good?
Me. I was just told... basically, upon getting up earlier this morning, that I had to immediately watch the new Danganronpa. Like, the forums were freaking out about it, and my friends were freaking out about it, so I watched it, and... Man, so I don't think... I think that the guy who writes Danganronpa, Kazutaka Kodaka, has, like... an uncanny talent for combining, like, mean commentative humor with, like, genuine, you are supposed to feel, like, this is supposed to be dramatically, this is supposed to be dramatically impactful, this is supposed to be, like, thoughtful and scary and stuff like that, but you're also supposed to laugh at it. Like, he really has, like, I've never seen, really, in anime somebody that's that tone perfect on it without ruining it, without it seeming, like, gross or mean or not funny or just seeming or doesn't make you feel anything. Like, he's really, really good at it. So without spoilers, like, that finale series is still, like, off the chain great. And everything except animation, it's, like, barely animated. It's a Seiji Kishi thing, so the directing is pretty, like, paint by numbers and not that interesting, but the writing is great. So that's pretty awesome. And that's, I guess that's the major thing on my mind since I just watched it, but I'm keeping up with most other stuff from this season that's major in any way. I'm glad that ReZero is giving people something to talk about because it's kind of a slight summer. Even the good stuff, like Sweetness of Lightning, I think is one of the better things this season. It's like, what do you say? It's just really cute. It's like, oh, look, he
did another sure is thing cute. For
his daughter. He's raising his daughter really well. And, like, and this week's episode was really emotional. Like, I almost teared up. It was so, like, oh, you know, but there's not necessarily much to discuss. So I think the thing that people are talking about most is ReZero and how much they do or don't agree with the direction it is taken. Like, I don't like the direction it's taken, but it's still very entertaining. So it's interesting to, you know, kind of discuss on that level. The other thing I'm really, really loving is Thunderbolt Fantasy, and what do you say about it other than, this is so much fun, you know, like, that's about it. Like, it's just a roller coaster. What do you say, you know? So, yeah.
I had a question, Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, maybe last week or the week before, we're talking about Mob Psycho.
Uh-huh.
Have the most recent episodes changed your mind a little bit?
My opinion at that time was just, I don't really know yet, let's wait and see, this is getting going really slowly, and that's still my opinion, that it's getting going really slowly, but I don't feel negatively toward it. It's just, yeah, my entire thing with Mob Psycho is just like, okay, we're getting to a point, I think, and so it's still in that mode, so I still enjoy watching it, but I don't feel like it's arrived at something I can really grab onto emotionally yet. But that's just me. I realize that's everybody's perception is different, and I like what they're doing with the brother character, like, a lot. Like, I feel like it's inevitable. Like, you have to address somebody in contrast to Mob in order to make Mob's perspective, make any character's perspective ring true. You have to contrast them with somebody who has, like, who's given interiority. Because, like, he had the rival in that big, super well-animated fight episode, but that guy was just seen from the outside. You haven't seen a character from the inside to, like, completely oppose Mob's way of looking at how his life is supposed to go. So doing that with his brother was great, but I still feel like I'm waiting for something to really grab me, and maybe I'll be waiting forever. I don't know. I hope not, but, you know.
Yeah, I didn't keep going.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just wait till the end.
Right.
I don't know, man. I think Esper stuff just in general, it was a trial for me to get through that in the first place. So I'm sort of just sort of invalidating my own opinion on Mob Psycho. It's like, you know what? This just isn't for me.
Yeah, right. And that's how I feel too. Is like, maybe this just isn't for me, but I do, like, I'm really curious to see where it's going. And I feel like some people feel like it's already arrived, and I just don't feel that way personally, but yeah.
Hmm. So Miles, what are you watching this season as a fan?
As a fan?
Just for
oh
you.
Oh my gosh. No, so that's a really hard line to, you know, walk.
Right.
And my desk, someone was asking me, oh, you have all this ReZero merch on your desk. Do you love it? I'm like, I think I do, but I also am responsible for marketing it. So figuring out which has been really challenging for me. So stuff that Crunchyroll does not have has been really helpful. So Kurumukuro is, like, probably my favorite thing I'm watching right now, but I'm watching last season's bit because Netflix is making us wait. And Robot Samurai is really dumb and really accessible and really fun to watch without, you know, having to turn your brain on. And that's something I'm looking for sometimes, and it does a really good job of that.
I saw just the first episode of that. out of curiosity, and it was, it did look like, oh, this looks like a nicely produced like mech show, but I was mostly just happy that they flipped the old cliche of a chosen mech driver boy gets a naked lady in a magic box from the past or another dimension, and they flipped it so that the mech driving girl gets a magic naked samurai from the past in a box, and he spends most of the episode holding her at sword point running around a facility naked, which I thought was funny, but, you know, yeah, I didn't see more than that, but I was like, all right, good on you. Good on you, Kuromokuro.
I'll give a lot of points to anything that's that well executed, and I'm only, I think, 4 or 5 episodes in, but it's just been probably the most fun thing that's not JoJo's to watch. Mm-hmm. And that's my qualifier for everything. Like, oh, this is my favorite anime this season, if you just don't count JoJo's. Cause
is JoJo's is still doing it for you at that level?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Like never before, even.
Really? Okay.
Part 4 is the best adaptation of JoJo's I've seen so far, and now we're past where I read in the manga, so it's new experiences, and I love everything it's doing, and it's incredibly well-directed for the most part. It's just like a really good media experience that I have never been able to put into words, so I'm not even going to try. But it's just everything I want in a 23-minute package, and I love JoJo's.
Yeah, I agree that this season has absolutely been the best directed. Like, that guy only gets better and better at, like, making the material really dynamic and fun and adding in Easter eggs and sound cues. Like, the sound design in that show, I've loved it from the beginning, but it only gets better and better just like everything else. The source material, I wanted to like it as much as Stardust Crusaders, but I guess I just need that hook of... the episodicness JoJo's, I don't cotton to as much as the driving, ticking clock JoJo's. Like, that just, in Battle Tendency and Stardust Crusaders, like, I prefer the ticking clock. So yeah, like, I'm torn, because I think the adaptation is better than it's ever been, but the source material, like, it's still fun. I still look forward to it every week, but it's not as exciting as it used to be for me, personally.
It's just a bunch of dudes being dudes, though, and I'm always into that.
I know, but, like, well, this didn't jump out to me how kind of less excited I was until the main villain showed up, until we got Killer Queen. And I saw him, and I was like, oh, that's exciting. Like, I'm excited now because there's a threat. Like, you know, as much as I liked, like, oh, is who's the little Durian-headed kid that they met. Like, as much as that stuff was funny... The two episodes that they spent with the Durian-headed kid who harvests money, like, harvests loose change, I didn't... You know, it's not the same thing as having, like, oh no, Killer Queen, and this guy, like, you know, dates a disembodied hand and shit like that. Like, that was crazy. You know, like, it's more exciting. It just is, you know? So...
Fair enough.
Yeah. I feel like... I guess maybe that's probably why... There is no ticking clock storyline, so that must be why there's not as much hype this season. Yeah. Not as much talk.
I guess so.
At least I'm not seeing as much JoJo's hype this season. At the beginning,
it's a little more low key, which is fine. Like, I'm.
Oh yeah, no, I'm just
love it,
you know.
Yeah, they're going to continue to love it, myself included. But yeah, you know, we something said for a bigger plot.
You know, we sit and we make observations, and then we share them on the podcast, and then and that's how that goes. So I read. All of Orange, the whole thing. The whole story, which you can do in a couple hours if you read relatively quickly, like I do. It's all on Crunchyroll Manga. What a coincidence. Mm-hmm. I watched the first episode of the anime and then didn't watch any more and said, oh, the manga's only got like 5 volumes? Well, that's like 2 hours. I'll just read it. Right. So, it's, you know, the show will take 4 or 5 hours to watch. I could get through the whole story.
Yeah, the show's not over yet.
Yeah, and the show isn't over yet. So I can get ahead
of
the game.
You're actually ahead of me on something, which never happens.
Yeah, right. I know what happens in that show,
I don't know how it ends.
Yeah. So I got through the whole thing, and I really enjoyed it. So it's run through with that sense that something terrible is about to happen the entire time, to the point where the first couple of volumes are actually a little hard to read because the atmosphere is a little... it's so kind of anticipatory and melancholy that I found it like... I was like, oh, are these... I mean, these poor kids, like, what... You know, I didn't necessarily want to go through something really, really difficult and depressing with these kids. But I stuck with it, and I'm glad I did. It sags a little bit in the middle, I think. I think where the show is at right now, basically it's been discovered that... so the basic premise of the show is a cute little shoujo heroine has a cute little shoujo boyfriend who's depressed, depressive anyway, and she gets a letter from herself in the future saying, hey, he is not with us anymore 10 years later, so here's what you got to do to save him. That's the basic premise. At where the show is at right now, it turns out that there's a group of six friends, and five of her friends, her and four of her friends, have all gotten letters to save this kid's life. And so
I would say that's a spoiler.
Yeah. Well, spoiler, that's the most recent episode. We talk about what happened in the most recent episode on the show frequently. Yeah. Anyway, if you're following Orange, in the manga, that is not as treated as big a reveal. Like, it is, but it's also kind of... Like, if that's a huge spoiler at that point in the story, I'm a little stunned.
People in the forums have commented that, as of the last two episodes, that they are not happy with the direction, like, the specific framing of events. That might be it. Like, maybe they think it's weird for this to be treated like a big reveal when it's supposed to be low-key or it's supposed to be indicative of something deeper emotionally. Because it's just kind of like its own da-da-da in the anime, which it shouldn't
be. Yeah, it's pretty much like that in the manga, too. Like, I don't know, but, like... The thing is that the story didn't have anywhere else to go, so they had to introduce that in order to keep the love triangle going. There's a love triangle between the main character and then it's a cute boy named Sua, who's kind of the redhead version of the main boy, who's the black-haired version of the heartthrob. So the whole thing is about suicide, and I would wager that... Orange is by... I should have read up on this before I started talking about it. but I would wager that the artist has been touched by suicide at some point in their lives, because the brittle fragility of the emotions that are on display in this thing, for all of its other flaws, for all of its sort of generic characters and... The fact that, you know, the main two characters are kind of they're puddles. They're puddle deep. They don't have a whole lot going on, but the story is really about how they find each other, and really it's a message about two people who have been touched by suicide or people who have depressed people in their lives. And as a work, it's definitely, I would say, if you've ever been touched by suicide, definitely read it. I think it's really good. I full disclosure, have in my life, and so I connected with this, you know, pretty well. It has a lot of those shoujo-y tendencies and, you know, all that stuff, but that, to me, that just made it pleasant. I didn't mind that the characters were a little shallow, because it's just trying to get you from plot point to plot point so it can make its point. And I liked the point that ultimately it was making, and I think people will be... maybe a little frustrated with the ending. I don't know. I don't really know how people would... It seemed like a natural conclusion to me. It could have gone one way or the other, and I won't say anything about which direction it goes, but we'll see. I'm now curious to see how people who are watching the anime feel about the ending and how they interpret what the characters go through, and once the show's over, we should come back to this so I can find out how you feel about it. Because the motivations and stuff between these characters, there's some character turns and stuff that I just didn't really... I didn't quite buy. It's some things that were in there to sort of artificially extend the story and sort of, you know, misunderstandings that would be cleared up very easily. And even the tortured way that these characters communicate with each other by just refusing to say how they really feel.
Well, that was the thing that I was going to say. You said that the two leads are puddle deep. I didn't really feel that way. I felt like all the other characters in the group of friends, I think there's six total, are puddle deep. But the main two, I felt like, were very... complex is maybe the wrong word, because they are very simple. They lead simple lives, but real, I guess. I felt like the main two characters, and I don't think it would have worked if it was the standard melodramatic shoujo tropes. I felt like all the other characters are more stereotypical, flat, simple kind of archetypes, but the main two characters I thought were very, felt very real to me. The boy, because of the depressive psychology that he expresses and how he expresses it, which I thought was very honest. He doesn't say, like, oh, I'm sad and I'm thinking about it. Of course he doesn't.
He's Fault in Our Stars perfect.
The
whole way through it.
I don't think so. Like, he's in the anime anyway, he's, like, really down on himself and, like...
That's Fault in Our Stars perfect.
But it's annoying. It's not like, oh...
You think it's annoying. I think the target audience for this does not find
maybe,
it annoying.
I think the original...
The target audience goes, oh, I think.
Maybe, but no, I don't think so. I think the... because he is irritating in the way that he, like, says he doesn't need anything... And
isn't isn't that part of the attraction?
No,
the teenage attraction?
Not,
like, he doesn't.
The Fault in Our
he's
Stars.
Running away. He's turning away from me, and so
no,
I must.
No, uh-uh. Like, the Fault
isn't
in Our
that part
Stars,
of it?
No, the Fault in Our Stars.
I'm not drawing an exact one to one.
Okay, so a shoujo character type. You're right that they romanticize the aversion this person has to socializing and the woe is me and stuff like that. I don't think Orange romanticizes it at all. I think he's likable because he's a likable person, and you feel bad that he's so like, well, I'm not worth anything anyway.
Well, maybe, you know what? Here's the thing, though. Uh-huh. The manga reads in much... I feel as though the illustrative style of it and the fact that, like, the anime is very artistically directed, which is a really awful and clumsy and dumb-sounding phrase, but that's sort of how it feels. It's the tone in the anime is... I felt a little different from the manga. So all the stuff that you're talking about, like, those panels are drawn, he is sitting on the stairs and disintegrating into white, and... Oh, I'm just a man. And it is fucking full-on Edward Cullen. Like, you are supposed to find this dreamy.
Maybe. I
like,
can't.
Frustrating and sad, but dreamy, you know, in a dreamy way.
Well, I can't speak... So saying that he's a realistic is speaking from outside perspective for people that I've known that reminded me of this character. The girl reminded me of...
The girl is well-written. I'll give you that.
Yeah,
I take it back. It's not a shallow character, but... The entire story is just her reaction to him, uh-huh. And by the end, it gets a little ridiculous in my mind.
I understand
that,
but I think,
you know.
Like, okay, so passive shoujo protagonist is a cliche, but I really, really cottoned to the girl in Orange because it's not just like, oh, I'm passive and this is perfect and cute. It was like this, like, again, it goes very, very naturally into the psychology of that kind of passivity, which is this belief that it's better. Like, this fear, this paralyzing fear that it's better not to act because your life will become worse if you act in ways that you regret. Like, this paralyzing fear of regret. And
yeah.
I feel that completely. Like, I feel like that's extremely relatable. Like, even stuff that, from the outside perspective, all of her friends are like, well, surely you should just do this. It's so simple. Why can't you just do this simple thing? But from her perspective, it's like, well, I know what will happen if I do nothing. She's wrong. You don't know. But that is what... people believe when they're trapped and when they're in this sort of fearful paralysis of low self-esteem. Like, you know, I believed in that a lot. So they're not complicated per se, but they're very realistic and relatable portrayals of these two character types. I imagine the main character being how the author feels or felt at one point in life, and the other one being whoever she was writing the story about. And everybody else is kind of a flat stereotype, but that's okay. So
okay, let me break down, like, I can do this simply. Basically, it felt like at certain points later in the story, in the last third, it felt like her inability to communicate her feelings. She had like that misunderstandings related to that happen at crucial points in the story that really blow up certain situations, and it stops feeling organic because at that point the character's grown quite a bit,
right,
and is getting more used to being more open and has outright stated several the way this is written, the emotional growth happens faster than the story really should go. So it's like, whoops, we have 5 more chapters. Let's have another misunderstanding like we would have had 6 or 7 chapters ago, mm-hmm. even though it feels like the characters have moved past this point in their relationship. Like, that, does that make sense?
No, yeah, that makes
like,
sense.
Like, at some point, it becomes a story crutch rather than a realistic character.
Yeah. No,
Like, you're relying on... Yeah, it's just kind of...
Yeah, I totally believe you. I haven't...
But that was it, though. Like,
yeah.
That was it. Other than that, like, you can read it... Like I said, you can read it in 2 or 3 hours, and... if you don't feel like, you know, watching the anime, you can just read it all on Crunchyroll. But I thought it was really good. I I'm really starting to value closed off narratives that are just, here's this one short thing.
Oh God, yes. Like that's kind of principally why I watch a lot of anime, because unlike American television, where you know it's going to be open ended until they run out of seasons, a lot of anime is produced, not all of it, but a lot of anime is produced to be kind of closed ended. So I'm like, all right, you know, less so these days, yeah. Yes, but still more often than American television. But you know,
well, still more often than not, even with anime.
Yeah, exactly. So
for all
you know, it makes
jokes.
Me happy.
Right, Miles, have you seen Orange? Do you have any thoughts on it?
Yes and no.
Okay.
So I watched like 3 episodes and I was really enjoying it, but it was a little heavier than what I've been able to handle when I come home from a long day.
Yeah.
And I read, I think, the first volume of the manga and really liked that, but then when I heard the anime was coming out, I decided to wait for that, so.
Yeah, I think for short stuff like this, especially shoujo-y stuff, I might just go with the manga. It's so convenient, and I read so much faster than I can watch TV.
Yeah.
Well, that's my problem, actually. I read it too fast, and then I don't feel like I had as meaningful of a relationship with the material.
See,
I cannot read stuff online.
I have to
read it in a book.
I feel you on that. I feel like now I can catch myself and slow down, though. Like, I'll be like, oh, wait, hang on. Okay, hang on, I'm going a little fast, and then I'll slow it down and go back and catch stuff and try and take breaks and things like that. But I know what you, and I feel you on that. You can read too fast, and then you'll get to the end of it and only remember like the, you know,
the only manga
climax.
I was reading. So I'm so bad with, that's the other thing. Manga updates monthly, and it's like a bite a month. It's like 3 or 5 minutes of reading a month, and so I forget and I get behind and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the one I am reading, or was reading, because I think it ends really soon, is Inside Mari, which goes so slow that there's no way you'll feel like you're processing the whole thing too fast. Inside Mari is the next thing from the guy who wrote Flowers of Evil. It's much better than Flowers of Evil, but it is much like Flowers of Evil, like, one thing happens every 2 chapters, so, yeah.
Mm.
I eventually got through it, you know, but yeah, like, generally, like, I prefer to watch anime both because the pacing is defined. So even if the pacing's bad, like, I don't know, it's defined. I read super fast, so that's a problem. And also, you know, the update schedule is more frequent. And I just like cinema more. Like, I feel like I understand,
yeah.
I understand and enjoy film language more than I understand and enjoy comic language. So that's just my preference. Oh, and sound. I love sound. So, of course, the sound element being missing from manga is a problem. But
I have one other, I guess, question for the both of you about that, because one of the reasons why I, like, so much prefer anime to, I guess, in this situation, manga, is because I can watch it with someone else. I live with my fiance, so being able to watch stuff together is a lot more satisfying to me than reading the same thing back to back or something like that.
Right.
Does that mean anything, or is that part of your anime consumption experience?
Jacob and I don't watch anime together unless we both need to watch the same thing for work, and it just happens to line up that we were about to watch it at the same time.
Exactly. It just doesn't line up most of the time.
It doesn't line up, and we'll watch things at different times and be in the mood for something. And like, I enjoy watching anime with Jacob, of course, and we do it generally when there's an opportunity to, but it's always like we have to watch this for work.
Yeah.
So it's never about, like, let's sit down on the couch together. It's like, I just need to get through this. Like, that's, like, you know, I mean, I don't mean to sound like we're, you know, like, begrudgingly or whatever, but it's a job. You got to get it done. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean, being an anime fan for so long, my relationship with anime has changed. And now it is a solitary activity, albeit with some Anna Twitter commentary, but we're not watching it, like, at the same time. But,
sure.
However, I got into anime because it was a social activity. I never would have otherwise. Because I was really looking for a social outlet when I was younger. I lived pretty isolated. I lived out in the middle of nowhere, and I was looking for hobbies that could bring me closer to people. And basically all of my anime watching in those days was done completely socially. And then when I moved in with people, it was at the same time socially. So as anime for me will always be, at least in some way, a social activity. If it's not, like, I think I would get really sad and lose interest. Like, there have to be other people talking about it. I can't just watch it in a vacuum.
Yeah, I would really like to watch anime in a group, but I would want to be specific. It would have to be, like, specifically, okay, Zach, you're not at work right now. This is not for work. It has nothing to do with work. And then I'd be like, all right, let's pick some stuff. Let's pick some wacky stuff, you know? I don't know. All right, let's. We got a bunch of Twitter questions. We should get to them. And then we should take a few from the chat before we wrap up. Okay. Well, Miles, we got about 8 billion Shirobako-related questions for you. For those listening who are not familiar, Miles is the number one worldwide fan of English-speaking worldwide fan of Shirobako. I assume there is a Japanese guy who is much more dedicated than you are.
I'd honestly be sad if there wasn't.
You'd be sad if there wasn't, right. See, that makes sense. So we got a lot of questions along this line, but I'm going to ask this one from Comedier, who wants to know what aspects of anime production you would like to see covered in a theoretical season 2 of Shirobako.
Ooh. Ooh. I mean, my favorite parts of Shirobako season 1 are stories that the writer, the director had that are like pretty transparently just changed slightly to fit a greater plot line. Mm-hmm. And I honestly just would like more of that. Just more, oh, this happened. This was a terrible thing that happened to an anime, and it was terrible for everyone involved. And we're just going to show you a slightly fictionized version of that. Mm-hmm. So it usually touches most parts of production when you have just a absolute garbage fire of an anime production. Maybe God Eater. Like, I want to see God Eater.
Right.
I interviewed the there was an interview that basically we couldn't use because they arrived really late because their flight came in late and all this other stuff that happened. But I tried to ask UFO Table guys about God Eater before it came out, and it was my last question of like a bunch of different questions that I was rushing through, and they got these 1,000-yard stare expressions and did not tell me shit about it.
They're like, how did you hear about that?
Yeah, I was like, oh,
and you're like, well, they've been advertising it, and they're like, who did that?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I was like, so, looking forward to God Eater. And they, the only comment, so they all kind of gave each other expression. The only comment I got was from the president, I guess, of the studio, and he was like, something to the extent of, well, the director is very talented, and we're looking forward to seeing what he can do with it. But it's, you know... like that, he was very vague, and now we knew why a season later, you know. So
maybe we'll get like the making of God Eater someday, like a series of interviews.
I would watch the hell out of that.
See, somebody else out of it. Somebody else on Twitter brought up the idea of a retro Shirobako set in like the 70s, which would just be the greatest.
Mm-hmm. Oh my god,
they had one episode of Shirobako devoted to that,
yeah, but.
I know. I'm just saying, like, that's a part you didn't get to. It's in the second half. And if you watch the second half, there is a whole episode that's devoted to, like, the production of Andy's Chucky, which is the hedgehog
right.
in the 80s. You know, so, which was really great. So, yeah. A whole
my favorite episode, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe, yeah, just more of that would be fine. Cells getting stuck together in the heat, all that good stuff. It'll be wonderful.
Or set it in the early 90s. Really any particular time where they were using, you know, all Cell, you know, so long it was all still all hand done. Dextera Love wants to know what vibes you've been getting from Sweetness and Lightning. Miles.
So Sweetness and Lightning has been such a surprise for me because I knew I would like it. And I did not expect to actually cry during it. I don't know what vibe got me to cry, but I guess it's a lot more emotionally impactful than I gave it credit for. I thought it was just going to be all sugar, but the looming mom, dead mom, has really. I guess that's the vibe I'm getting for it.
Wait, hang on. There's a dead mom in this anime.
Yeah,
there's a dead mom in this anime about a father.
Bad, yeah,
a touching anime about a father. Anyway, please go on.
Well, the thing is, they never talk about the dead mom really.
Like Goof Troop,
you always feel her, but you don't feel her in Goof Troop.
Speak for yourself. Some of us feel the palpable tension of a lost loved one in every scene, Miles.
So with Sweetness and Lightning, that's what I'm getting right now is just there's this like melancholy just under the surface, and it really hits me hard.
Right.
So I guess that's the vibe I'm getting for it.
My favorite thing about it, the vibe that really strikes me about that show is that it does such a good job of getting into the head and the mannerisms of a girl that age, of a like little kindergarten girl, without with like stuff 100% of the time, like not glamorizes, like puts a sugar coating on that, so it's like, oh, children are so cute and innocent, or else it tries to go too far in the other direction, and it's like, oh, little kids say shit or whatever. But Sweetness and Lightning, like, it takes the nice, like, middle road where you really, really kind of remember what it was like to be that age, and not that you were innocent, but you just didn't know a lot of things, and you went into everything with your best intentions and stuff like that. And what I'm getting to is that there's a... My favorite part of the show so far is there's a scene where Dad is sick, and he's trying to get the daughter ready for school, but he has to lay down and go to sleep, or I think it's a weekend, and so he's just like, you just go to sleep, and she's like, well, he's sick, so I'm gonna go, like, get some food for him, because they're doing this, the whole premise of the show is they're doing this thing where they're trying to cook for each other and, like, make better meals for each other. So the whole thing is, like, this 5 to 10 minutes of her, like, getting herself ready, walking outside, and she's just wandering around the city by herself. And she makes a game out of, like, walking on the sidewalk, on a line on the sidewalk, pretending there are sharks on either side. And everybody's really nice to her. Like, nothing bad happens to her at all. She's just walking around the city going to their friendly restaurant to pick up some food for her dad. And it's just, you really get into this moment, and you're like, oh, everything's okay, and this is kind of fun, and she's having an adventure or whatever, and so you're firmly in her perspective. So by the time the 10-minute mark or so rolls around, and her dad shows up in the city, and she runs toward him with the food, like, yay, I found something to make you better, and what are you doing out of bed? He turns around and he yells at her, and the whole thing just shatters, basically. He's like, you know, why'd you leave the house? And he's, like, so angry because he was terrified that something bad was going to happen to her. And you are just firmly in her perspective when she's just, like, heartbroken that her dad would yell at her because she's been having this wonderful time and whatever. And so she falls on the ground and starts, like, flailing all of her limbs, and he tries to pick her up and, like, do the thing with the little kids when they're upset, like, every single, like, arm and leg is going in different directions, like, grabbing at things, like, telephone poles and kicking his face and just, like... She's so upset that she doesn't know what to do. She just, like, turns into, like, one of those noodly things outside the car dealership, you know? And I just thought that was perfect. I was like, well, that was just a really, really well-realized portrayal of why she would feel this way and react this violently to you know, her dad being sick. So it wasn't from his perspective at all, because we know what his perspective would be, which is, oh, no, I'm worried my little girl is lost. Like, so they don't focus on that at all. They focus on how she didn't think there was a problem at all, and now she's just really hurt that he yelled at her. Like, anyway, it was a long way to go towards saying that Sweetness and Lightning is really, really well executed. So, yeah, it's good stuff.
All right, this is a big one. Miles Forte tweets, wants to know, Rem or Amelia? These are the two waifus from ReZero, right?
Neither?
Yes, they are. Amelia is a character.
ReZero has the heroine that Kadokawa wants you to love, and that's Amelia.
Right.
Then it's got the hero that it wants you to feel like a piece of garbage for falling in love with halfway through, which is Rem, which is right. Like, this show does a really good job of making you want to fall in love with her, and I'm really mad that, you know, Subaru's not reciprocating her feelings. I'm just as mad as the rest of the community, but they're not the kind of girls for me. Give me the princess. Give me Priscilla. Give me the Bowel Slayer Elsa. Yeah.
Are they upset because they wanted the story to go in a different direction, or are they upset because is it just like, well, this isn't what I wanted, which is different from we think this is badly written?
They're upset because of the consequences of something that is badly written, giving them a totally justified...
this is the Jacob.
No. I'm being sincere. So
sometimes I gotta filter.
People are totally justified in their feelings that the show should be setting Subaru up with Rem. The show doesn't believe that. The show believes that it's just creating a tragic dichotomy, but the show is unfortunately cut off Amelia so long from the story and is doing this wacky thing where they're making Rem the perfect woman and trying to build chemistry with her and Subaru that it's not what the author is intending, and people are absolutely justified for thinking that Rem is a better character. But I disagree, because I think Rem is like a perfect pedestalization of a servant waifu, like, sort of a thing. Like, she's... Rem is not a complete character. Rem is an idolization of a perfect servant.
We had a 25-minute like episode where it was just Rem and Subaru, the main character, talking, and right. That was the episode where
I wrote an editorial about it. Yeah, I wrote a lot of words on that episode.
We got to hear like Rem's actual reason for doing everything, because I was so annoyed earlier in the series at her like affection towards Subaru, and that one like justified it for me.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Here's the thing. It's justified, but it's unhealthy, and the show is framing it as though it's healthy, and though this just makes her the perfect woman, when in fact it's like, oh, you need therapy. So that it's a difference between like no, so I can believe a character acting that way towards Subaru. It's a little perfect, and she wouldn't use those exact words. Those exact words are a little bit like, all right, this is what you want your waifu to say. But I can believe somebody with that low self esteem and that backstory being that fellating toward him. I don't agree with the show's perspective of his framing it as like, see, she's his angel come to rescue him. And it's like, yeah, you probably shouldn't rely on the approval of a girl who clearly needs therapy to make you feel better about your bad choices. You know, like, it's complicated, but I wrote a big long editorial on that. So
I'm like 70% there with you, especially on the, and then 100% with you on the Amelia should not have disappeared for 10 episodes if they're going to have her be the protagonist in 25-episode show.
Like, yeah, well, having her, and especially when most of that is just plot twists, that's the thing. ReZero, like, for as much as it does a good job of characterizing the protagonist, it's got so many structural problems. Like, this does not need to be this long. You don't need this much lore explanation for this. You don't need to repeat this emotional beat 3 times in a row for 3 episodes. You don't. Like, it's structural hell, really. I, you know, that's my perspective. The greatest
tell us how you really feel.
Well, you know the greatest thing about ReZero? The direction is on point. It's not even the writing. The writing is a hot mess, but the direction is so great. Like, that guy who directs the show, I don't know what else he's worked on, but, like, he knows his shit, and the musical score is great.
So
and,
good.
Yeah. But, were you saying?
I mean, we're in a world, and this is a quick aside, I promise, but it's just been so funny to me. I think I do like the writing on a micro level, on a level, episode-to-episode level. I feel like if I tried to rewatch this show in a marathon setting, I would hate it. Because right now I spent like weeks worrying about the white whale, and that was completely unrelated to what I was worrying about just the week before.
Exactly.
And
it's
keeps
like
doing this thing. And on a week-to-week basis, that's fine, because then I'm like, oh, this new thing, but it doesn't tie in at, as far as I can tell, to what we're supposed to be feeling more broadly about the characters.
What did Subaru defeating the white whale have to do? It had nothing to do with the actual struggles that he was overcoming for the previous episodes, which were good. The entire episode where he goes to every other suitor to the crown and tries to convince them to give him an army, failing completely for 3 completely different reasons based on their different political philosophies, was great. It has nothing to do with the actual resolution to the problem, which is, I just happen to know the right things to say because my maid waifu gave me a pick-me-up, and now I'm fighting this giant white whale. Like, what does that have to do with it? See, you're right. Like, individually, moment to moment, he writes some very evocative and thoughtful things for Subaru's character. Not necessarily the other characters, but Subaru's character. And then he tries to string them together into a story that's just like, I would like to see him fight a white whale. I like this trope from isekai stories. I will put it here. And it's like, structure, structure, structure. You need an editor. It's a web novel, so, you know, an editor.
ReZero.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There sure is a lot of conversation surrounding that show.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm going to have to watch it at some point. It's the snakes in the pet shop.
Yes, you are.
It's big snakes in the pet shop. It's going to be hard to watch.
Yeah, I don't know, man. All right. Branko Berkson has asked me how the Neon Genesis Evangelion manga is, and he is asking me that because earlier this week I mentioned that I'm working on a comparison article between the manga and the TV show, so I'm about 4 volumes into the manga, and I think a long time ago I read up to like volume 5 or 6 and then never finished it, so I'm looking forward to getting through the rest of it, particularly the ending. And the thrust of the article is going to be the emotional language differences between the TV series and the manga and what the characters' internal monologues are saying, because the manga is very much dictated a lot by what Yoshiyuki Sadamoto feels, how he interpreted that story. The TV show is a lot more in line with Anno. And it's not like there's that much daylight between the two of them, but there are significant differences. And I feel like particularly the emotional language, and specifically like particular pleasures of the TV series and what it can do there visually versus what manga can do visually and how those two sort of clash in this story in particular. That's the piece. That's kind of what I'm writing. But I have to go through that entire show and that entire manga again, and it's interesting.
It's like a gauntlet.
Yeah, yeah. I've come to just sort of admit that Evangelion as a franchise is just my favorite. That's just my favorite thing. And I've just embraced that. And so I'm just going to keep, you know, sort of going through it until that's been satisfied. but the truth is that the final volume of the manga came out last year, and I've been meaning to finish it off for a long time, so it's time to finally write something on that. But the manga is, it's good. It's 90s. All right. Fuzzy Proxy asks, I know underrated anime is subjective, but what are some shows you feel deserve more attention? Miles, do you have any underrated anime you want to recommend?
Well, in what context? Because if it's just a season, I'll say a Manchu. If it's last year, Wish Upon the Pleiades.
Really?
If it's all time, yeah, that was way better than anyone gave it credit for. Like, it's not the best thing in the world, for sure, but the difference between how much recognition it got and how good it was, that was a big gap. But all time, or like more broader than that, I don't know.
All time.
Ooh.
All time.
The most underrated. No. I won't hold you to that. But what comes to your mind as a classic example of an underrated show?
The things I'm thinking of are just things that like no one has seen, like Kumano-sama Banbanzai, or I don't know.
I'm trying to think of one. That's why I'm sitting here thinking.
Beck Mongolian Chop Squad, I would say. That show is super good, super thoughtful, not really a thing that most anime fans have watched or would even be interested in watching, but it's really, really good. For something that's not super recent and underrated, I would say Beck.
Space Adventure Cobra? That's, again, just anyone who's watched it seems to love it, so maybe that's the wrong. It's not underrated necessarily.
I guess it's just old. It's just hard to get people to watch it. I mean, I don't know why. Space Adventure Cobra is so good. All it takes is someone mentioning Cobra if I, like, see action figures or something. I will want to buy the toys, and then I'll want to watch the show. Like, there's something about the design of that thing that's so appealing.
Oh, I got one. So I might be wrong here because I've only watched the first two episodes, but I love Glasslip.
Really?
Oh.
See, but I thought you were going to say Blade Dance of the Elementalers.
Oh my god, that was so bad.
Or Momo Kune Sword.
How can it be bad? The show starts with a hero walking in on a twin-tailed red-headed tsundere naked, and she challenges him to a fight. That's the most underrated.
My favorite anime.
I saw Momo Kune on Blu-ray at Fry's Electronics and laughed out loud.
Momo Kune Sword.
I was like, why is that here? Wait, I know why. let's see here. Schrodinger's Matt asks, sometimes when I see something great, I think, I'm glad this is unique. And other times I think, man, I wish there was more out there like this. What to you separates the former from the latter? Well, that's a good question. So in other words, when you see something and think, I'm glad this is unique, like The Fifth Element.
Right.
Okay, now I don't want The Fifth Element 2. I don't want it, and I hope they never make it, and I'm glad they never did. It exists perfectly on its own. Doesn't need anything else. Man, I wish there were more out there like this would be Swiss Army Man. Wait, no.
No. Swiss Army Man, you need one of.
That's a toughie.
Not literally another Mad Max movie, but Mad Max Fury Road is like, I wish more action movies were this dynamic. I think the broader you go with talking about the appeal of a thing, like, it can be the same thing to thing. Like, taking Mad Max for an example, if you look at Mad Max and you go, I wish more action movies were like this in a broad way, then that holds true. But if you're saying, like, I wish we got a Mad Max movie that was in this exact style, like, that maybe less people would agree with that because it's like, oh, how can you possibly recreate this? So I think the more specific you go, the less likely you are to want more of a thing. The more broad you go, you know, I think you can apply that to almost anything. You wouldn't mind more like 90s neon flavored action adventure movies Would you, even though that's not like everything that comprises the fifth element, but you
no.
mind more of that?
No, I wouldn't.
Okay, so you just have to speak in broader terms, and you know.
Yeah. No, you're right. But at the same time, like, I feel like just as a person, I'm sort of gravitating. Like, I loved like shows in the last couple of years that I just absolutely loved. So like Death Parade, Space Dandy, Unique. Do I want more of either of them? Yes. Well,
yes,
yeah, I would
Death
watch.
Parade.
Yes,
I
on Death Parade,
story,
I would watch more. I would watch another season of Death Parade. They will
you
probably never
Dandy?
Make one. What's that?
You wouldn't watch another Dandy?
Literally, something similar, but not literally.
First, they would never go back to Space Dandy, yeah. But that's a question. That's kind of a gotcha, because I wouldn't lobby for more Space Dandy. If you made it, I would absolutely watch it, but I wouldn't like lobby. If you said like, what do you wish they'd make more of? I wouldn't say Space Dandy, because they made 26 of them. Those, and most of them are pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I kind of had my fill by the end.
Right. If you just mean like Bones animation anthology type thing, then yes. But more Space Dandy, literally, I think we got those.
We got it.
Those characters didn't have more of a story to tell.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was I gonna say?
Miles, do you have an answer for this?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh no, not even close.
You're like, you guys can continue to talk over me.
So we need more Death Parade, because I didn't feel like Death Parade told a complete story. It did on one small level, but then it just...
It only finished one of its stories. Yeah. It finished the most important one, but it only finished that one.
Yeah, it spent so much of its runtime acting like this other stuff was important, and it just...
They probably thought they were going to get more.
Yeah, but it was a big, like, come on. Like, I was pretty frustrated with Death Parade. Like, I enjoyed it, but I just didn't feel like I was getting a complete story when I watched Death Parade.
Actually, honestly, on the note of Death Parade, I would always want more Mushishi.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Then I think about it more, and I don't know if I do, because I want things like that, but then most things like that are just never as good, and more actual Mushishi probably wouldn't even be as good as what was written now, because... The author hasn't been writing manga in 10 years.
See, I would agree with that, but season 2 of Mushishi, which admittedly was like almost 2 years ago, but season 2 of Mushishi was so much better than season 1 that I think I would want more, because he has material that they haven't adapted. They didn't adapt all the things he's written, so yeah, I mean, just wring that dry, like animate it literally all the manga he did. Like, I would, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I think we're only a few chapters left, though.
Just a couple of OVAs,
still.
You know.
Yeah, okay, so that'd be great.
All right, we better speed up here. All right, Fuzzy Proxy asks, we all know Miles has Shirobako. Any other series that have convinced any of you to import or collect merchandise? I have bought the Evangelion movie, the Rebuild movies, some Ghibli stuff, but just movies. I've never bought a TV show. Do you have any imports? No.
I don't think so. I always just wait. Like, if I wait, like, even 5 years, it'll eventually get licensed. Like, Michiko and Hachin was one where it was, like, eventually they picked it up. The one I'm still waiting on, because no way could I import it because it's 50 episodes, is somebody bring over Polar Bear Cafe already, because I want to own Polar Bear Cafe, and it's just never happened, and it's like, why? I love this show so much. Why is it only...
I would bet that there are some licensor demands on Polar Bear Cafe.
Yeah.
That is what I would wager.
But...
I don't know. Let's see here. Let's see. Have you collected anything other than Shirobako, Miles?
Yeah, but it's mostly older stuff, so stuff that never got licensed here. Like, I have Angel's Egg on Blu-ray and Laserdisc.
Ah, there you go.
I have a bunch of Oshii stuff on Laserdisc that, like, only came out on Laserdisc. Or VHS, but I don't want to collect old tapes.
You don't have a VHS box set of Lord of Lords Reunite?
I don't want to ever watch anything in VHS quality again, if I can help it.
Oh, but come on, it's fun and ironic.
Adjust the tracking bar.
And hurts my eyes and fuzzy and... no, I'm good. I'm good.
AngelXO3 wants to know if we think Kyoani's A Silent Voice movie will get the necessary push to be recognized in international animation film festivals. Well, that depends on how good it is. If that's a really good movie, I don't doubt that Kyoani's visual prowess will definitely get it in front of eyeballs. If the story is a home run, then I bet you it will. And if it has a firm behind it that's gonna push it,
there you go.
Yeah, see, I was getting to the answer, Miles.
Didn't want to cut you off.
If you have someone that's going to spend money promoting it that way and getting it into festivals, which I feel like if the movie's good, somebody absolutely should do, because that definitely has potential. I feel like the right marketing team could do the right thing, could do something good with A Silent Voice. I feel. That just based on what I know about the story.
Why no anime's ever really made it into that circle. Or not enough.
Into international animation film festivals? I mean, yeah. Okay, so they get into, like, New York International Children's Film Festival and, like, TIFF, right?
Sometimes TIFF.
There's a few others. There's one in Canada, right? There's a few. I'm just saying, like, if that movie's good enough and, say, like, G-Kids takes an interest, they could probably get it. Like, G-Kids could definitely get that nominated for an Oscar if they wanted to.
Monica almost got nominated for an
No, it didn't. No, it didn't. That's not almost. Making it on that list, Alvin and the Chipmunks Chipwrecked almost got nominated for an Oscar then.
I mean, just as bad movies have actually gotten nominated for the animated Oscar, so...
You're absolutely true. You're absolutely right. Okay, let's see here. Okay. Actually, let's go ahead and take some questions from... Wait, hang on. Nope, let's take a few more of these, because some of these are for you, Miles. All right. Tom Aznable asks, has your opinion turned around at all on Oshii's Avalon?
So, he gave me the actual Polish version of Avalon to watch, because I watched it, the English dubbed version, which was god-awful, and apparently, like, changes a bunch of things. Or maybe I watched the Japanese dubbed version with English subtitles. Anyway, I didn't like it. I haven't watched the Polish version yet. Sorry, Dom.
Okay, then. Yeah, I didn't like Avalon either. I mean...
Can't win them all.
I mean, although you're a huge Oshii fan, I don't think I like any of his live-action work.
I like the ones where he's being a pretentious, like, film student.
How'd you feel about Garm Wars?
It was okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I sat through it, which I thought was pretty impressive, considering, what was it, Assault Girls? Came before it, so
jeez.
Saw Girls was really bad.
All right, Lost Thief wants to know. I want to know this too. Why did you buy a figure of Asuna dropping lettuce? Because I saw this on Twitter. You posted a picture of this figure.
Yeah, it's the most awful thing I own for sure. It's always been a joke that I've both ironically and unironically loved and hated Sword Art Online since its creation.
Okay, I can get behind that.
It's bad. I've never thought anything except for it was just absolutely miserable as an anime.
I'm looking at this figure right now, and I didn't know what you were describing. Oh, okay. What the hell?
Now, I posted, and I was mostly sober when I posted it, the video, but I don't know if I was sober when I bought the figure, and I think that might be the answer to the question. But what really gets me is that she is the best cook in the game. She's, like, maxed out her cooking skill. So why would she ever drop a salad? Forget the, like, sexual problems with it. Forget the, like, the weird sexualization or, like, wanting the, like, wife cooking you food and messing up and being, like...
She's underleveled, like, in walking, Miles. She couldn't walk the salad to the table.
She's level 100 in cooking. Why would she make any mistakes cooking? It's the worst thing ever.
She rolled one on walking.
I'm clumsy. Figure out a way to validate yourself with that. Oh, I see you're way ahead of me.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a mistake. I got my employee discount on it, so at least I didn't actually spend a full $100 on it.
I have a Queensblade figure in the closet. That is, yeah, still up there.
When you min-max cooking so hard that you min-out walking.
That's a cast-off figure, too. Mm-hmm. I should get that out again. All right. I did want to bring this up. So, Delthair asks, best Leiji Matsumoto girl, Maytel or Emeraldus? Earlier I posted a shot. The other manga I was reading was Queen Emeraldus, which Kodansha just put out in this really nice hardback volume, translated by a friend of the show, Zach Davison. I only made it through about half the book before I had to move on to Orange so I could talk about it for the show. But that shit is amazing. That is
so good.
It's really fucking good. Like, if you're into 70s sci-fi, like, at all, like, if you like fucking vaporwave videos that use 70s imagery, read, like, get it. It's really good. It's really cool. Like, 70s manga, sci-fi manga, was so influential on everything. And going back to the source material finds, like, you are uncovering gold. Like, it's amazing work. And Zach Davison totally killed the translation. He did an amazing job. It is some incredible prose. So, yeah, go get that. Queen Emeraldus, man, Volume 1. That's awesome, awesome shit.
I've been waiting my whole life to read Leiji Matsumoto stuff. And now that I finally got to, it just, especially that book, it feels like if you really like Star Trek, whatever the best episode of Star Trek you feel is, it's that experience. It's that same, like, how is this so much better than every other media? How is this not immortalized even more so than it is now?
It honestly, like, you're reading it and it's like, how is this so good? How is the writing so good? How is he putting together these chapters that are Floyd? Like, it's, that guy's a master. Like, I've never read his, yeah, man. I guess it was Leiji Matsumoto, man. That guy's a legend.
You don't say.
I know. I say this behind me is an enormous Interstellar poster.
Right.
But that's like fucking entry level stuff. Uh-huh. So, I mean, now that I've read this, I really want to read the rest of his manga. So, I'm yeah. Count me in on this shit. Let's take a question from the chat before we wrap up. We don't want to take up too much more of Miles' time here. Let's see. Someone wants to know what a cast-off figure is. That's an action figure where you can rip the clothes off of it.
You can you can undress her salad.
You can. More than the salad comes off. A Tasty Sub wants to know, in the spirit of Shirobako, what's everyone's favorite donut? So this is a good question. Now, earlier there was one in Twitter that I think I scrolled past or something, but they said cake or pastry donut. Now, this is a good question. However, I feel like there's an obvious answer.
What's the difference between a cake and
a pastry donut is like a yeast ring, right? It's like a Krispy Kreme. And right. Then the cake donut, which is what it sounds like. It's more cake-like. Like a donut hole.
Oh, no, I the texture.
Right? Yeah, the texture.
I prefer the pastry donut.
Right, see, it's a pastry donut.
Oh, no, it's the cake donut.
Infidel!
So are you...
A donut that, like, means something.
Are you putting that in milk?
No, I'll have it with a lot of coffee, but, like, if you're eating a Krispy Kreme or something like that, you just get a sore throat and no satisfaction. If you eat a cake donut, you have a good time. You enjoy the subtle sweetness. It's not overdone. And it gives more opportunity for the toppings to shine instead of sliding down your throat in an unpleasant fashion.
I mean, or you could just take a big bite out of a block of foam, Miles, or you could do that.
Do you ever worry about choking? Because as you swallow the cake donut, it rapidly expands in your throat with the heft of your saliva instead of slipping down naturally as God intended.
I keep it well lubricated with coffee. Don't you worry.
I shouldn't have to lube my own donuts, Miles. They should come pre-lubed.
Okay. I don't know where this... All right. I think that is the bell. I think Jacob has rung the bell, and now we're ready to end. Miles, thank you. It's been a pleasure to have you. We've been meaning to have you come on the show for a long time. I knew it would be fun, and it was, so thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Miles for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating or review. We'd really appreciate it. And I'll see you all next week.